Should you be using amino acid supplements? That is a common question we are seeing from a lot of you, and we are addressing that along with a question about beetroot powder on today's Ask Us Anything episode theme for our Inside Sports Nutrition podcast. Welcome back, or if you're new here, thank you for tuning in to the show. We are your source for all things sports nutrition related, and the show is hosted by myself, Dina Griffin, and my co-host, Bob Sebahar. We are both registered dietitians and board certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years, here to help provide you translations of all that nutrition and sports science, apply it to real life, give you interviews with a variety of athletes and experts where you enhance your knowledge, and bring a great nutrition conversation to you each week. So in today's episode, a couple questions that have been coming in from you all, and we are addressing those on the show. Real quick, before we get to the show, wanted to mention that I've got my Performance Nutrition for Women Ultra Runners 40 and Older group coaching program starting up soon. So if you're new to ultra running, or you've been doing it for a while, feeling like you're not sure how to structure nutrition to support your training, get through an awesome race, especially with hormone changes going on and aging on top of it, this is your opportunity to take charge and do some focused work. Especially important if you've been dealing with some poor energy levels or confusion what sports nutrition products are best, how to work out those supplements that are out there, and just applying concepts like nutrient timing, nutrition periodization. We can spend a whole lot of time out there on the internet and social media forums, so this class will give you more focused work, and we'll have answers to those questions and get to apply the information right away. So registration is going to open here pretty soon. Head over to nutritionmechanic.com. You can get on the wait list so that you're notified when the registration opens. All right, listeners, let's get on to episode number 94. It's time, Bob, for another Ask Us Anything episode. So exciting to hear from our listeners. And thank you, everyone, for getting those questions to us, to our email and through the website. Awesome to have you on board. Bob, I know you're excited for these questions as well.
I love the questions we get from our listeners, because I just love answering questions. Even like when I'm doing presentations, like I could literally just do a presentation on answering any questions. Like I'd love that. So please keep coming with these questions, listeners.
Yeah. And of course, it's fun to hear from our colleagues out there as well. In fact, this first question from Jessica, who is also a registered dietitian and doing private practice out there, working with athletes. Thank you, Jessica, for sending us your note. She was mentioning that she had in high school and college been a runner doing marathons. And so endurance nutrition is one of her passions. But she was mentioning here in her email, Bob, that she's working with some younger athletes, and she was curious about our thoughts on beetroot powder for high school age runners. And so that's essentially what she's curious about, if there's any issues or just what our thoughts are, and maybe even into the college age, you know, anything to be aware of there.
Absolutely. The never ending question on beetroot. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like I always get a very low level hit on beetroot powder, juice, like whatever it is, supplements every single week. It's not like uber popular, but it always kind of comes up in conversation somewhere. So we absolutely love this question. I love this question too. And Jessica, one, congrats on working with young athletes. I'm seeing a huge shift, you know, back in the days, Dina.
Dun, 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 check, I check.
Did it. Yes, back in the days, a lot of young athletes and their families, parents weren't really concerned about nutrition, but I'm seeing an uptick in that. So congrats to all of you parents and young athletes for stepping up and, you know, going and meeting with qualified sport dietitians. So that all said, let's unpack this a little bit, Dee, because when I first heard that question, the first thing in my mind was, okay, we're talking about high schoolers, and it doesn't matter if it's high school, middle school, college, doesn't matter. The first thing in my mind was, and literally, because this is how we operate, is, well, what does their foundation nutrition look like first, right? What are they controlling and optimizing blood sugar? Are they getting enough carbs and protein and fat to support developmental stages, puberty stages? So that's where my mind goes first. Then the second one, because we're talking about runners specifically with our question, is what is the nutrient timing plan? So what we know with runners, obviously, is they don't eat, or let's just say they don't consume a lot before practices. Like if you're talking about high school, cross country, and or track, there's not a lot going in their body before practices or during practices, and sometimes not even after practices for that matter, because it's hard. It's hard. Like running is hard on the gut. It's hard for kids to have something in their stomach and be able to run. You know, I remember when my oldest son was running cross country and in high school, we talked about that a lot because he also did triathlon, and he actually, his nutrition changed from between his triathlon season and his cross country season. And he told me, he's just like, Dad, I can't do anything. I can't eat anything after about, you know, lunch before cross country practice, which is in the afternoon, but he could before triathlon practice. So it's just to say that there's a lot of stress on the gut before any type of running event or running practice, especially with kids, because they don't know their bodies yet, right? So that all said, those are the things I think about first before I think of supplements. Now, when I think of supplements like beetroot powder, of course, the first thing that comes to my mind, Dina, because we're, you know, we are dietitians, are beets, right?
Yeah.
So why shouldn't kids just eat more beets, right? Well,
because they taste like dirt, I heard.
They pretty much do. They do. But there's, I mean, great health benefits, but here's the thing. You're not going to get any young athlete eating beets. Like I think maybe 2% of all the young athletes I've ever worked with actually like beets. But here's the thing, like you can't get the benefits in whole food beets because the beet powder, the beetroot powder is basically concentrated beets, right? And yeah, you need a lot of it. And that's the benefit of these powders, is it shoves a whole bunch of the benefits of eating beets into these little capsules or powder. So you get a larger effect, basically. Wait, right.
So yeah. Thank you, Bob. I'm just thinking and interrupting here. We need to do a whole episode on, you know, beetroot or nitrates.
Oh, yes.
And so we should add that to the list.
We certainly should, because it's popular. Yeah. So, okay. So after we've checked the boxes of, okay, foundation nutrition, nutrient timing, hydration, like all that stuff. Okay. Let's finally answer her question. So, can beetroot powder be beneficial as an ergogenic aid? Absolutely. Because it increases the body's nitric oxide, which basically in basic terms, it can help with vasodilation, which means you're getting better blood flow, better delivery of nutrients and oxygen to and from the working muscles. Absolutely, hands down. Are there research studies to prove that? Absolutely, hands down. There are. My big however is, one, I don't think any of these studies have been done in young athletes, but you can extrapolate, you know, vasodilation is vasodilation. However, I don't, like in my mind, if you're talking about a young athlete in pre-puberty or puberty, there may be some differences. I don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. But that said, that's the only thing that would come to mind. But yeah, I mean, we know beetroot powder works, but here's the thing. On my list, actually, to your point, Dina, like when a parent comes to me and says, hey, should my young athlete take supplements? And, you know, I go through my different categories of supplements, but when I get to these ergogenic aids, I say, you know, nitrates are definitely on my list that they do have support in research, but it's at the bottom of my list. And it's not because they don't work. I just think there might be better ergogenic aids before nitrates. And I think another thing to unpack this is a lot of adults use beetroot powder sometimes for that, you know, nitric oxide boost, if you will, better vasodilation, but more from a health perspective versus a performance perspective. Have you heard a lot of your athletes doing that?
Yeah, just for the other benefits, like the other compounds, other vitamins, all of that, the power of nitrate containing foods. There's so many other benefits than just that nitrate itself.
Yeah. So they work. I mean, absolutely. But I would also think, hey, also to your point, Dina, like young athlete, we know we want young athletes to eat better anyway. Like this might be a better way, or this might be a good way to introduce more nutrient density. Now, I wouldn't want this athlete or this type of athlete to really focus on, oh my gosh, my performance depends on beetroot powder. Can it help? Yes. In all the research I've read, there has to be a loading dose of at least 5 to 6 days. So what we also know about high school athletes is sometimes their schedules are a little bit erratic. I work with a lot of high school swimmers and runners, and sometimes they forget to do stuff because their schedule's so packed. So I would just question if you're going to use beetroot powder, it's not just like day of competition, you know, it has to be a concerted effort to build it up in the body for at least, I would just say at least a week before your competition.
Exactly. And I think when you were mentioning research, yeah, in the younger athlete population, I think along with that, Bob, I don't know too much that's in the way of specific research on young female athletes or female athletes in particular either, or the endurance female athletes. So that's just something we're keeping our eyes open for more of that. Any potential negatives or perhaps more ergogenic benefit in some athletes. So yeah, that's just a word of note. Do you want to mention the since in the past we've talked about pee and urine, do you want to mention something that happens with potentially happens with consumption of beetroot powder
Are you
in
talking about the
terms
fun discoloration?
of... Yeah. I
Because
mean,
it's
I
kind
already
of
spoiled
scary
it, I guess.
sometimes.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary, especially for young athletes. I've actually
Yeah.
had some young athletes, you know, do that, and I've warned them. I'm like, hey, the color of your urine may change colors, so don't freak out.
Yeah.
I will tell you though, young boys love it. They think it's just the best thing, you know, ever, and
Is
they
that right?
just, you know, oh, so many jokes. And
Oh
then
my.
girls are like, you know, because girls are more, young girls are more mature, and they're like, hee, that's funny. Okay, let's move on. Where boys are like,
Exactly.
oh, what? They'll laugh about it for days.
Oh my
Look, my pee is
gosh.
pink.
Yowza.
Yeah,
Too
but you know,
funny.
actually, to that point, Dina, you know, you can also, it's funny, and I certainly don't want to get young athletes in this habit, but you know, sometimes you don't know if you're taking enough beetroot powder, and this is a slippery slope because you can actually test that. You just reminded me of the urine strips, right? So you can actually get those urine strips to see, you know, kind of test the nitric oxide. So that's how some adult athletes will kind of titrate how much they use. But I think that's probably not the best practice for young athletes right now. We just don't need them doing that.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying too, Bob, to mentioning like the foundation, nutrient timing, all of the other 95% or whatever percent we want to put on that is first and foremost, and then this being an option. But certainly working with the dietitian is always best to make sure it's safe.
For sure. And there are other ways to improve performance additionally, right? And that's why you're
Yeah.
talking about foundation, nutrition, nutrient timing. But yeah, I mean, to your
Yeah.
point, to sum that up, I think it can fit. It's you know, it's time and place. It's my newest mantra, time and a place for things, right? We know it can
Yes.
be relatively safe. We just don't have specific research on the young athlete.
So thanks for that question, Jessica. It was awesome.
Okay,
Sounds
Dee,
good.
another
Move on.
question that's been lighting up our inbox because we've been talking a lot about protein. We talk about protein deficiency, which is probably the number one, really the number one issue that we see with a lot of athletes is just they're just not eating enough protein. So we've been talking about protein powders and protein and you name it. Well, the questions now are coming in, and I'm going to pose you with this question first, Dee, and let's chat about that. So a lot of the questions are focusing on, okay, so let's talk like what's the difference? What are branched chain amino acids? What are essential amino acids? And I feel like we should really dive into those a little bit because we've gotten so many, like a handful of questions on those. So let's talk about BCAAs, branched chain amino acids. Let's talk about essential amino acids, and let's compare and contrast and just look at those in the light of really what they are. Do we need to separate them? Do we need to use them separately? Do we need supplements, right? So
Yeah.
why don't you just kind of start us off? Like, what are we talking about here?
Okay. Yeah, maybe just starting with some basics. Protein is made up of amino acids, right? And we have 20 amino acids Nine of those are what we tend to call essential, or there's this other term, indispensable. But we've got essential amino acids and non-essential. And so, as we've talked about before, Bob, the essentials are those amino acids that we need to get from food sources. So our bodies don't make those amino acids to, you know, make the proteins in the body. So we have to get them from food. And so we've got the essential amino acids, and the branch chain are three of those essential amino acids. But as the name implies, branch chain, like if you look at the structure of those particular amino acids, there is this different end to the molecular structure that makes these branch chain just more differentiated. And then the class of the branch chain has a little bit different function and uniqueness in terms of the ways, especially in an athletic population, that they can be beneficial through diet or supplementation.
Which three are the branch chain? Which ones are we talking about? Which amino acids?
Yeah, great. So yeah, we think of leucine, isoleucine, and valine.
And that's going to become important for our conversation here in a second. But I think from what I hear you saying is, okay, we've got these essential amino acids, which we cannot make in our body, so we have to eat from food. Mm-hmm. But branch chain are three of those nine essential amino acids.
Right.
Right. And I think that's what's kind of confusing to some of our listeners, because they're putting branch chains in a different category of amino acids, where in effect, they're just essential amino acids. They just are called something because mm-hmm. their molecular structure is different. Right.
Right.
Okay. So that's what's confusing about this.
It is. Yeah. Because again, when we've talked about supplements ad nauseum and in some of our other episodes, or just diving into that, I mean, there's a whole bunch of supplements on the market for branch chain amino acid products or the essential amino acids. But remember, these are the broken down, you know, individual units of protein. So if we're eating adequate daily protein and getting a variety of protein sources, a lot of us are going to be A-okay on our amino acid intake. Again, we have to have that assessed individually to be sure of that. So why would we bother with taking a supplement in branch chain amino acid form or the essentials? And I think this is where we've got some research. We have some black and white arguments out there that they're not useful or they can be effective. And as you've said before, even in this podcast, Bob, like time and a place for these kinds of supplements. Do you want to touch on a few of the reasons why essential amino acid supplements might be used, or the branch chain might be used by an athlete?
Yes, I do want to touch on that, but I want to go back, and I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole with you, but I do feel like, you know, we've highlighted and we kind of called out everybody and said, listen, you're probably deficient in protein. And what we're talking about is eating, consuming protein.
Yeah.
Now we know different eating styles that are being done these days, plant-based, plant-focused, vegan, whatever you want to call it, may be more protein deficient than omnivore. But although I still see protein deficiency in omnivore eating too, with athletes eating animal proteins, because it's just, we're not prioritizing foods that have protein. So I just wanted to start there, because I feel like a lot of athletes these days are jumping to these BCAA supplements. And because, well, they've been around for years. I mean, literally for decades now. I mean, Ironman athletes have been taking BCAAs since, you know, I started, and that was 25 plus years ago.
Yeah.
So they've been popular, but I think they come and they go because, you know, well, because they're supplements, right? So let's kind of unpack this a little bit. So whether you're protein deficient or not, should we look at branch chain amino acids or essential amino acids as a supplement? Do we need to look at those? Well, maybe. And that's a hard question to answer, right? Because I do believe that we could, just like you said, we could get all of our essential amino acids from the food that we eat. But knowing most of us are protein deficient, that would answer your question and say, well, maybe there is use for these supplemental amino acids, right?
Yeah.
They are broken down a little bit, right? So they're denatured, they're easier to digest and to use in the body. In fact, branched chain amino acids are used by the muscle much faster than other amino acids.
Right.
So there's a plus to this. It does come back to time and place. Would I recommend these without looking at daily nutrition first? Absolutely not. No way, Jose, right? Because you do want to understand where you're coming from, but I think they do have efficacy, right? So what, like, we can just pick on this, but I do believe like that ODARK 30 workout in the morning where we know not a lot of athletes can eat, maybe a branched chain amino acid powder, like a scoop or so, and we'll talk about dosing here later, maybe it would be beneficial. Maybe it would be beneficial to add or to augment your daily protein intake. I don't want to get in that habit though. Same thing with protein powder.
No.
Like, I love protein powder, but not in replacement of food that has so many other nutrients in addition to protein. So yes, I think these things could be greatly beneficial in terms of supplementation. And like I said, I think a highlight of branched chain amino acids is that they're used as energy a little bit faster. But here's the thing too, Dina, from what I've read, and I know you've read the same thing, is it's not like branched chain amino acids are three different amino acids. But what we've noticed from research in the, you know, just near in just the past few years is it's really about one of those amino acids that really has magic, isn't it?
Our leucine favorite.
Leucine.
Amino
so then,
acid, yeah.
Then you have to argue, in my mind, I argue, well, how important is isoleucine and valine then? If leucine's the star of the show, do we really need branched chains or do we just need to focus on leucine? I don't know.
Because then you hear of people just supplementing with leucine, right? Even in their protein powder, adding more leucine. Mm-hmm. But from what I've gathered, Bob, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there can be some inhibition and competition of some of those other amino acids essential, right, that we need to get. So
For sure. There
can be this noise and interference between, like, if you're doing supplemental leucine, that actually can be counter to what we're looking for, even if we're talking about lean muscle or performance benefits for our workouts or adaptation from the workouts that we're doing. So I think it's another case of more is not necessarily better or appropriate.
Let me ask you this, Dina. Let me put you on the hot seat really quick, because, you know, female physiology, there's a lot of new research being put out there now, and even just, you know, layperson education mm-hmm. being put out there on the internet and everywhere. But, you know, a lot is being discussed with females and leucine. So are you seeing that a lot of female athletes are using leucine supplements or BCAA supplements, or are they just focusing more on food? Because isn't there a specific range of leucine that is usually recommended at certain times?
I know. I feel like we still need more research to support that. But yeah, I mean, when we look at anecdotally, observationally, when, especially for peri-postmenopausal athletes, increasing overall protein intake, but trying to be particular about the leucine-rich sources, so that indirectly or directly we're getting more leucine, I think that is highly beneficial for our athletic population for sure. And aging combined with that, right? With our anabolic resistance, just trying to work with those age-related changes that occur. So yeah, I would say not so much leucine specific, but either the branched chain or the essential amino acids, just trying to increase those through supplemental form or looking at overall increases in protein intake, which is my preference most of the time.
Do you think it's possible to get enough leucine through food?
I do, but if you're vegan or, you know, dieting, hardcore dieting with calorie restriction, I think some of that can get tricky.
Right.
Especially with vegan, right? Because a lot of our leucine and branched chain amino acids are going to be in animal proteins. Like you can.
They are.
You can get through hemp and some of these other plant sources, but geez, you got to eat quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, and listen to this, because I just pulled this up really quickly while we're talking. Like, and you'll get this different responses anywhere, but what are top foods high in leucine? And the top one, chicken, right? The second one, turkey. The third one, beef. So that's why I'm asking, well, what about our plant focus, our plant-based athletes? Because now it's a lot more difficult. Although on this top 10 list, it had, or top nine list, it had pine nuts at number six, fava beans at number seven, and then split peas at number eight. But now I'm going to argue, how many people eat a lot of pine nuts, fava beans, and split peas? Okay, let's just put it out there. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
I mean,
think those are highly.
those are not popular plant-based foods.
No, and the other ones, yeah, I mean, in our some of our plant-based protein powders, like the pea
Yeah.
isolate, will give you some decent leucine. And then again, like hemp protein powder will have some. But I know there's the camp out there that's like anti-protein powder. So, okay, back to the
Right.
food sources. And then again, to the ones you just mentioned, they're not highly popular. So, yeah, I do see with when you combine this, like a vegan, postmenopausal athlete, those three.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, we got some work to do to
That's a very specific
maximize,
population, but
optimize.
that's,
I
is it your thought that that's probably the most challenging group here when it comes to protein, leucine, like needs, right? In terms of their physiological needs?
Yeah,
Okay. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah,
absolutely.
because I mean, the postmenopause implies, generally speaking, over 50. So there we've got aging master's
Right.
athlete as well.
Yeah. Well,
So,
let me ask you this. Do you find a lot of people, a lot of the athletes you work with, or just questions that you get, are they actually turning to BCAA or even essential amino acid supplements? Like, how popular is that with your practice?
well, yeah, I think it's growing quite a bit. Again, I
Oh,
think
okay.
though, in the whole spectrum here, people, reading about it on their own, kind of jumping to the supplements really before trying to optimize through the food piece first or the nutrient timing, kind of missing out. Like, how do you use these? How much?
Yeah.
Actually, can we do some other things through food, which you get all those other benefits from a micronutrient and synergy perspective or food matrix perspective? So I think there's still a lot of education to be done, more research to be done, and N of one scenarios that we talk
Yeah.
about all the time with context.
One of the big
Yeah.
mistakes I find that people or athletes using these supplements, and these are, I'm really talking about branched chain amino acids and essential amino acids, just powders basically in pills, is they're put, this is one of the mistakes I think that's being made. They're putting it, or you can even put protein powder in the same category. They're consuming it around food. So, food meaning higher protein rich food. So maybe they're having some chicken, but they're having like a drink with BCAAs. And at the same time, I'm like, well, that's kind of a waste, right? Like, if
Yeah.
you're going to use this stuff, use it at specific times to augment the protein that you're having throughout the day. Or like myself, N of one, I'm not, and you know this, D, like, I don't like training in the mornings. I will, but my
Yeah.
body's just not primed for it. But if I do, I don't eat anything. Like, it's very tough for my stomach because, again, I'm plagued with GI distress. So I have to be careful of that, especially running. But I don't do that. But I have in the past taken products that have branched chain amino acids in it with a little bit of carbohydrates at the same time because I know I want something and
Yeah.
I need something for that physiological adaptation. So do you think time and place, do you think there's a place before exercise in using branched chain amino acids?
I do. Yeah.
Is there a recommended amount? Do we have amounts these days, or is it still kind of
For the
iffy
branch
depending on?
chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, depending on like female, male
Right.
age, life cycle stage. The range for branched chain that I've seen is like 5 to 7 grams,
Yep.
or doing in an essential amino acid powder, which remember, listeners, includes the branched chain, but that might be 10 to 12 grams,
Yeah,
is
exactly.
kind of what I've seen in a few of the research studies. And I was just going to add, Bob, because I think one of our awesome listeners, Kristen, had asked about pre-workouts.
Oh,
And like
yes.
in the context that we're talking about, what about the pre-workouts? And those can be all over the place, right? Because some of them will have caffeine or other ergogenic aids, proprietary blends. They might have other precursor ingredients that promote energy production. Or, geez, and I just want to get on my soapbox quickly, Bob. I think you'll join me.
Hop on. Let's
hop,
do it.
Hop up. But the proprietary blends, so when we're talking about especially the amino acids and the branched chain amino acids, there are some companies out there that have proprietary formulas. They won't break down how much of their 8 grams of quote unquote protein is from what amino acid source. So like if it's an essential amino acid specific powder, it'll just say whatever number of grams, but it doesn't break it out. And you'd think it's kind of sort of the same across the board, but I've seen some differences that I was surprised by comparing products and companies that do break down the source of each amino acid in the formula. So that's just a little like pay attention to your products if you are buying, let alone like if it's a supplement, is it safe and efficacious and all that in our NSF certified for sport designation.
Yeah. Well, so, I think, you know, rule number 997 when it comes to supplements is, you know, the proprietary blends, you gotta, you know, buyer beware with those because you don't know what you're getting. And because we just talked it, like go back to branch chain amino acids, like we're talking about, and we've kind of identified that leucine is probably the biggest player there. If it has BCAAs in it and you don't know how much leucine is in there, like you're rolling the dice, right? And I mean, I wouldn't spend my money on that if I didn't know exactly how much was in it.
Do you find, Bob, in terms of that pre-workout window, is there still time and place where you'll put those in? Kind of like the scenario you were describing for yourself with some GI stress, early morning training, other contexts around that you wanted to throw in?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think definitely that's one category. So if you're prone to GI distress or just like your stomach doesn't feel good and you know, it's early morning, you can't put anything in it. I think they're time and place. I also love it before strength training. Like if it's same thing, ODAR 30 in the morning weight training, where you're not able to eat something, you know, protein and carbohydrate rich first. Yeah. I mean, if you're lifting mid morning later in the day, I don't think it's really necessary because you can just use food. But I do think it's wonderful because we know for physiological adaptation, for strength, we know we need to bookend, which means we need to consume protein and carbs both before and after strength training. So I think there's a great time and place, but I don't want people to be over dependent on it because if you can do it through food, it's usually better because you get more nutrients out of the food. It's not always better because I can argue that, right? Sometimes there is a better time and place for branched chain amino supplements.
Definitely. Yeah. I can't recall a time where I took an essential amino acid or branched chain amino acid, Bob, after or before a workout. And I was like, oh my God, I feel so good and satisfied. Yeah. Like you don't feel that the same way as, you know, a yummy smoothie or a yogurt bowl or something like that. But again, there is this context where these kinds of supplements can be beneficial. So
yeah, I mean, you're definitely not taking them to fill yourself up because it's not working, right? It's not increasing satiety because they act differently in the body and your body metabolizes them much faster, but you also don't have fiber and carbohydrates with them. So you don't get that satiating feeling. So, I mean, I wouldn't use them to control blood sugar by any means. I mean, that's just probably not going to happen. Yeah.
Not going to happen. Nope.
No, but again, kind of wrapping that up, like time and a place for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think kind of summarizing, it's really important. We wanted to make sure that everyone understood that branched chain amino acids, which there are 3, are part of essential amino acids, of which there are 9. So they're actually part of it. They're not separate from that. It's just the designation of the molecular structure, which is why they're branched for a branched chain. So I think that's important, number one. Number two is, yes, that we can use them time and place, but I don't think we should create an overdependence on them or even a dependence on them at all. I think it could be a supplement that is rotated through with some athletes. And from what you were saying, Dee, maybe more of the older female athletes who are postmenopausal may benefit more. It's what it's sounding like right now. And certainly, like, I would not use them on young athletes because I don't want to create those habits yet. I want to create food, you know, food choices first. Not saying that they wouldn't work on young athletes, but the creation of that food philosophy first is very important in young athletes. And really young athletes, I would say under 30, because, you know, your taste preferences are still changing and developing. So I do think there's a time and a place for this, but, you know, I'll tell you this, it wouldn't occupy a lot of shelf space in my pantry. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Well, I know that we could talk on many of the other rabbit holes related to the essential and branched chain amino acid supplements and the research nuances out there, but I think for now we can leave it at that. But certainly if you've got a specific question, anyone out there, you can drop us a note over at the hello@insidesportsnutrition.com email address. And we so appreciate that. All right, Bob, I think we will leave it there for now.
Sounds good, Dee.
Thank you so much, listeners. And we'll catch you on the next Inside Sports Nutrition podcast episode. Thanks again for submitting those questions for our Ask Us Anything episodes. We greatly appreciate it. Stay tuned for next week's episode. We've got Amanda Archibald returning as a guest, and she is an expert in nutrigenetics and culinary genomics. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, well, you'll definitely want to tune in to that interview. She's got a lot of great information. And she's going to be also talking about how our genes can affect our appetite and weight regulation and selection of dietary pattern and so much more. So stay tuned for that episode coming up next week. As a reminder, we do love your support in helping us to promote this podcast, especially if you find the information helpful to you, the real life strategies useful in your quest for improving your health, your performance. Give us a 5-star rating over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's pretty easy to do. It takes maybe 14 seconds to do that. And it really does help us grow and share our content with other listeners around the world. And if you have a comment or a question, of course, you can send us a note. hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. We appreciate that as well. If you'd like more information about the nutrition coaching services and offerings that both Bob and I have, you can find Bob over at energyperformance.com, ENRGperformance.com, or myself and my team, nutritionmechanic.com. Thank you so much. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.